What's up, NFL fans? Con McCarthy here with my co-host, as always, Blake Pace, here to talk to you about another week in the NFL. We just got through a championship weekend. It was real exciting. What do you think, Blake?
I love the first game. And I know, like, we're going to talk about each game a little bit, right, but, you know, we each went 1-1 this week. I enjoyed the hell out of the first game. Second game got a little boring after a while, but I'm excited. We're going to have a lot building up for the Super Bowl, have a big old podcast next week, just previewing the Super Bowl, all the stuff, and, excited.
Well, I'm real glad that you're not starting off the show this week with the Jaguars win, because that would have been a little embarrassing.
For
me, at least, because I've talked a lot of junk about them, and you've been a huge supporter, but I'll give them credit. They put up a great game against
it
the
It was
Patriots.
A hell of a game.
And we'll get into that later, but first off, I think we're going into 19s this week, right, Blake?
Yep, 19s. You got any for me currently?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Blake just tried to give me a hint before, because, as you all know, I'm not good with numbers and jersey numbers. So, he said there was a white wide receiver, right?
That wears NFC 19. Tore it up
in
this year.
NFC. Adam Thielen.
Adam Thielen.
I just thought about it right
yep.
then. That's great.
19. And then AFC, rookie wide receiver that really just tore things apart. He was in the playoffs this year. Had a great rookie season. Wide receiver.
Great rookie wide receiver at AFC.
Plays with one of the best wide receivers in football.
Plays with one of the best wide receivers in the football?
Yep.
I'm feeling so embarrassed right now.
Who are your favorite wide receivers? Who's your number one right wide receiver?
Antonio Brown. Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yep, Juju.
Please stop it. I am so embarrassed.
Yep, jeez. Juju. Let's see. Oh, here's a big name. He's with the Saints this year. 10 years in the league.
Ted Ginn Jr.?
Yep, Ted Ginn.
You see, people, I know football. I just don't know jersey numbers. As soon as you give me a little bit of a hint, I can get it.
Browns receiver, a little bit of a disappointment in his second season.
Corey Coleman?
Yep, Corey Coleman. Lions wide receiver, kind of got things going.
Marvin Jones Jr.?
No, kind of got hot the little first like quarter of the season.
You talking about the rookie?
Yeah.
Kenny Galladay?
Yep, Kenny Galladay. We've got, let's see, what are some other big ones? Robert Aguayo, who's, you know, not in the league this season.
I think he is in the league.
Oh, Chargers.
The Chargers picked him up. Why would the Chargers do that? I don't know why they do this to themselves. Why would you go and get a kicker like Robert, whatever?
Yeah, well, last year he wore 19. Some other ones, Tajay Sharp with the Tennessee Titans. Got Aldrick Robinson, Andre Roberts.
Oh, Aldrick Robinson, man. He's bounced around a lot in his career.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm Mitchell with the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Any other ones that really stick out? All-time greats. Oh, wait, hold on. I got to throw out Quan Bray for the Colts.
I
throw that out there.
That's a stud name right there, Quan Bray.
All-time greats, you got Johnny Unitas, one of my, you know, good old Colts quarterback. You got Keyshawn Johnson, Miles Austin with the Cowboys, Eddie Royal, spent a lot of time with the Bears.
Jane Tech.
Let's see, any other big ones? Brandon Marshall for one season. What year was that? What year did he?
One season? Dolphins, maybe?
Let's see. What years did he wear that? He wore that 2010, 2011. So, yeah, Dolphins.
Yeah.
Yep, Dolphins. Joe Montana wore it for a year. Interesting. Yeah, that's all the guys really I want to get into for that. All
right.
Big 20 next week, so get ready for
big
that.
Big 20.
Dude, 20th episode.
I will be ill-prepared as always.
Yep, sounds good.
So, you ready to talk about subjects this week?
Of course.
All right, let's get into it. So, Nick Foles had himself a game this last week. Mm-hmm. Put up some huge numbers against the Vikings. 78.8% completion percentage, 352 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. So, has Nick Foles earned himself another shot as the NFL starter? And if not now, what if he wins the Super Bowl?
No, I still wouldn't give him a starting job elsewhere. I wouldn't trust him with a starting job elsewhere. I think that, you know, Doug Peterson has done a great job switching from, you know, such a mobile quarterback in Carson Wentz to really getting under center with Nick Foles and making things work with him. He looked brilliant last week. I would just like to mention that you did pick the Vikings. You said that it was going to be, you thought, you know.
Oh, no,
I'm trying to remember. You were very confident You were very confident on the podcast that the Vikings would win, but I read your article and you kind of threw it in there like, now would I be surprised if the Eagles won? No. And I was like, all right, well, yeah. you were pretty confident in the Vikings. That's on the podcast.
I think I only picked the Vikings to win by like 3 against the Eagles. I did, which that didn't happen at all. I understand that. Yeah. I don't think anybody really expected the monumental collapse of the Vikings in that game.
I did.
You expected the monumental. You thought that was going to be
that. All that I said last week was that they're tired and they don't have enough size and depth on the defense. And what did their defense do?
So you thought they were
going
to lose by 30.
Their defense fell apart. No, I picked the Eagles to win, I want to say by 7 or 10.
I'm going to give you credit for it. Listen, you definitely did.
Yeah.
You definitely picked it.
I didn't think it would be that big of a blowout.
No.
But what you did see was the defense just fall apart. And it just shows you can't have your best players playing 79% of snaps and expect them to make it this long into the season without getting tired. They got whooped by a beefy offensive line. I know we're getting a little off topic. I guess I'm just more talking about the game as a whole. But I still, going back to Nick Foles, I wouldn't give him a starting job. I think that, Carson Wentz, he's a good backup. He's probably one of the best backups you can have in the NFL, and I would trust him behind Carson Wentz coming back from this injury. It's going to be, coming back from an ACL surgery, you're never 100% guaranteed to be healthy right away. And so I think that Nick Foles should stay in Philadelphia, and he should just ride it out with them.
Well, you're definitely right. He's a good backup to have, 100%. And it was great he went back to Philly after Kansas City and everything like that, because that's where Philly's where he's had the most success in his career. But I don't know a few of his career numbers. I mean, he's 60.1% completion percentage for his career, 61 TDs to 29 interceptions. That's not bad numbers when you take it all into account. I know he had that one inflated year where he had 27 TDs and 2 interceptions in 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really good production for a year.
A
he was also
season.
Under Chip Kelly's system, which for the first couple of years in the NFL, Chip Kelly's system looked like the best.
Oh, can we also just note how in this game, their offense looked a lot like what they ran with Chip Kelly?
It did.
It was kind of like they were kind of calling back to that. And it was like, well, you had a lot of success in this offense. Let's try and run some
plays
like
that. Which is great credit to Doug Peterson, because that's how you adjust.
You're optimizing the best potential out of your quarterback,
you're
knowing what he can
right.
do well.
And I will say about this, about Foles, some of those throws, they were A-plus throws. Those were very good throws.
Definitely.
Some of those, I mean, the escape and throw to Alshon Jeffery where he looked like he racked up, it was a little Wentz-like. I was a little impressed and everything.
Definitely.
But I will say, I think Foles is not going to be, if he was a starter next year, I don't think he would be the worst starter in the NFL. I really don't think he would be.
As long as Blake Bortles is still a starter quarterback,
well, that's what I'm saying. His numbers are better than Blake Bortles already. I mean, that's how I'm saying. And if he wins a Super Bowl, I agree with you. I think that his best place is being a backup in Philadelphia, where he will be loved for the rest of his career in Philly. I mean, he will be
a legend.
He's already was pretty well liked in Philly for what he did for them and everything
his
for his couple years.
Cemented that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's already a Philly legend, just like Casey Keenum's throw will always be a legend in Minnesota.
Exactly.
So I give him all the credit in the world. And especially with how stacked this free agency quarterback class is. I mean, you talk about all the good names out there. I mean, maybe another year where Mike Glennon's becoming a starter of the Bears, Nick Foles would have had a legitimate case of going out there
definitely.
To free agency and going and getting a job somewhere. But with how stacked free agency class this year and the rookie quarterbacks that are coming up, I think Foles' place is best in Philly.
Yeah, definitely. And, especially just, you saw it when he tried to leave the first time. He failed to find success in St. Louis. Well, in St. Louis,
and then with the Chiefs,
he was backing up there. But he's got it in Philly. He's got a fan base that supports him. He's got a young quarterback starting over him and will start over him. I heard one thing. It was like, someone was like, "Is Nick Foles the starting quarterback next
Please
year?"
Stop. Please stop. If anybody ever even hints at that.
I saw that in a comment feed of a live stream that I was watching. I said, are you kidding me? Ugh. Carson Wentz was the MVP of this season before he got hurt. He's the quarterback of the future for Philly. I just think that, his best situation for him is in Philadelphia. And, backup quarterbacks don't make awful money. So, if he's... Backup quarterback is probably one of the best jobs in football you can have. Because you only go out there when your starter gets hurt.
Yeah.
And, you're still making good
the
money.
Expectation level is not as high.
Drops.
A lot less pressure.
Definitely.
And things like that. I mean, maybe he'd be another good backup like Moore in Miami. I mean,
exactly.
Moore's pretty
just
well thought of
like
and everything like that,
Definitely.
And the thing was, I will say, Jeff Fisher, what were you doing in St. Louis? I mean, there is yet another quarterback that's coming out of the Jeff Fisher scheme that just looked absolutely awful. And then he's going to lead his team to the Super Bowl now. I mean, it's just hilarious.
And the funniest thing about Jeff Fisher is he just keeps popping up in headlines.
He does.
He came out and said, yeah, I'm speaking around with some coordinators because I think I'm going to get hired this offseason. I said, Jeff Fisher, you're not finding a job as a head coach anytime soon.
Defensive coordinator.
A little off topic, maybe. Even a GM. One of the great things that Jeff Fisher did in his career was talent evaluation. He was terrible at scheming, terrible at getting a locker room. But his draft, you know, Ogletree, Aaron Donald, all these guys that he had drafted, the secondary he drafted in St. Louis, he had good players, just never knew how to execute it. If he wanted to be a GM somewhere and embrace that he was no longer, you know, a coach, I think he could have some success there.
I could see some of this. I will say he was good at trading, too, in the draft. You remember when, they ripped off the Redskins pretty hard for the RG3 deal?
Yeah.
Even though, if you look at the players that he drafted, I mean, they didn't get anybody super special out of
that.
But still, yeah, you're right about the
talent
evaluation.
He built that defense up.
And I'm saying his defensive schemes aren't that bad. He's a pretty good defensive mind.
It's just tough to get someone
away from the offense.
It's just tough to get someone who's in this mindset that he's been a head coach for however long he was to take a step back and become a D coordinator. That's tough. But if he wants to be in the NFL... He needs to.
I mean,
that.
It's worked out before. Jim Schwartz, I mean, people like that.
Great defense.
That's what I'm saying. There's plenty of guys that have taken a step back.
Yeah.
Jack Del Rio for a while, I'm pretty sure. Didn't he take a step back as well?
Who just got hired?
Kubiak.
Got hired? Pat Shurmur.
Yeah.
He was head coach of the Browns.
That's what I'm saying.
He took a step back, became an offensive coordinator, reworked his game, and now he's head coach of the Giants.
I feel like every good coach has to go to the Browns at one point, right? I mean, Bill Belichick, Bruce Arians, people like
they
that. Everybody goes to the Browns at one pack just to see, okay, this is what I'm not supposed to do.
Yeah.
And they learn from that experience.
Definitely.
So, I guess we talked a lot about, we got a little off topic.
Yeah, we got off topic there. But
so let's go on to our next topic. So, we're flat out going to talk about this game because our whole podcast is really built up to this game. What did you think of the Jaguars-Patriots game? What did you get out of that?
There was a lot I got out of it, and especially even the day after the games where I was, you know, just listening to a bunch of other reporters and listening to a bunch of live feeds on Facebook, you know, all these guys that I listened to. And one of the biggest things that upset me about the game was that, you know, people don't understand that football isn't a game of just talent. If you took 22 players, one from each position from the Jaguars and Patriots, you would have five players from the Patriots, I think. You'd take Brady, you'd take their center, you would take
Gronk,
Devin McCourty. Brandon Cooks because of that wide receiving core in Jacksonville. But the rest of that, you're taking Jacksonville. You're taking the rest of their line.
Oh, yeah.
Their entire defense and, did I say the running back? Their running back. I'd take Leonard Fournette over them. So, the Jags were the more talented team.
100%.
But, you know, it just comes to that discipline that no one else in this league seems to understand except for Bill Belichick and the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bill Belichick, he's the only one that's still making the team do wind sprints, you know, in week 10 of the regular season. No other coaches make you do that. But Bill Belichick knows that if you need to be equipped to play every game for full four quarters up until the Super Bowl because that's their only goal. And, you know... The Jags, they lost a lot in the second half of that game, and especially on the offense. You know, they got off to that early lead. I thought the game was over for the Jags when the Patriots put up that touchdown to make it 14-10 going into the half. I knew that, you know, you needed a bigger lead going into halftime if you wanted to win that game. And unfortunately, you know, at half, I was like, you know, this is basically over.
it's funny because, I mean, the Jags entered the fourth quarter with a 10-point lead.
Exactly. But you know, it's just stuff like that is just so deflating for you. I like using the word deflating when talking about the Patriots. Still not over that AFC Championship game. But, you know, the Patriots just have a better coaching staff, the best coaching staff ever, and they have just the best mentality. There's so much of it comes down to the mentality of your locker room. And you know, that's why you never see them celebrating in the locker room after a playoff win and dancing crazy like Minnesota, like Philadelphia, like New Orleans. New Orleans celebrated, they lost next week. Minnesota celebrated, they lost next week.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Philadelphia celebrated, they're probably going to lose the Super Bowl to the Patriots.
Well, I mean
there's such a, the New England way, the Patriot way. It's just, they're in a whole other level, and so you can be the more talented team, but if you're not disciplined, you're not winning, and that's what happened with Jacksonville.
when you play at such a high level for so long, it becomes the norm that winning an NFC or an AFC championship, I mean, it just means so little.
Oh, yeah, it means nothing.
I mean, you saw what Bill, I think it's like 2 years, how many years running, Belichick got the trophy and just like handed it off. He does not care about that. He wants the Super Bowl. That's what they all agree. And like, they're not completely inhuman robots, as people like to like point out. They still celebrated when Brady threw that touchdown pass at the end. Belichick, I know how we talk about he's inhuman too in a lot of press conferences. He gives his players credit when his credit's due. He said a lot of good things about Danny Amendola this week, who I think was the MVP of that game. He was good.
Mr. Reliable.
That's what I'm saying. In the playoffs, he just kicks it up a notch. Yeah. He's like Brady's little buddy in the playoffs and everything. He doesn't have Edelman.
Blanket.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You don't have Edelman. You don't have Gronk in this game. And this is what I was going to say. I said about this in the article, and I've talked to you before about this. I thought so many things went right for the Jaguars in this game. Where, like, Blake Bortles played well. He played one of his best games of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The defense got pressure on Brady. Gronk got hurt. They had an early lead. Fournette ran well at times. They had a 10-point lead going into the fourth quarter. Patriots still were able to win. Because it's like people like us, when people that watch the NFL all the time, it's like nobody expects the Jags to win when they came into the fourth quarter with a 10-point lead.
Yeah.
Until it would happen, like, nobody would believe it. Because the Patriots have been in that situation so many times, and it doesn't matter. Tom Brady is almost perfect in the fourth quarter when it comes to games like this.
Mm-hmm.
You just expect him to beat you, and it's really a credit to the Patriots, and you can hate on them all you want. And I'm not a big Patriots supporter either, but you got to respect them.
The
way they play.
You have to respect it.
Definitely.
Just a few things also about that game. I kind of put a little discredit to Doug Marrone and their offense in the second half. They had so much going right for them in the first half, and you're right, they did get out to that early lead. And honestly, you know, I thought that their offense was flowing in the right position, but then they got in the third quarter and it was like, oh, let's just try and run the ball every play and run out the clock, and the Patriots won't be able to come back. It was only a 4-point game at halftime, 10-point game in the fourth quarter. The Patriots have come back from far worse. You need to beat the Patriots, you need to be aggressive
all four quarters.
Like, you need to try and score every single opportunity. Actually, you know what? Even more deflating. 50 seconds left in the second quarter.
I was going to
say
that.
Two timeouts.
Yeah.
You take a knee.
Yeah.
It's a 4-point
game.
That's
not how you beat the Patriots.
You know, you don't. You need to go into halftime with at least, you know, like a 10-point lead. If you could have gotten a field goal off of that, I would have felt a lot more confident, especially because, you know, then you get that 10-point lead. That's at least a 13-point lead, makes things more difficult. You need two touchdowns from the Patriots. It was tough to watch. I was very upset after the game for a while, actually. I was very upset with the Jaguars because of how they played in that second half. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, it all ended for me on those two last drives in the second half. You get the unnecessary roughness penalty for the hit on Gronk. You get the two pass interference calls on Bouye or Ramsey. I forget who. I think both of them got one. But it put the Patriots right in prime position to score before the half. Jags don't try and score with 50 seconds left and two timeouts, and the game was basically written.
I would say, I mean, with 50 seconds and two timeouts, I mean, I know you have Blake Bortles quarterback, but he was playing well already. You already saw that this was already one of his better days. He was pretty locked in and everything. If you don't want to be too risky, I understand that. You, like, absolute meltdown if Blake Bortles throws a pick six in that situation. I understand that. At least do something. Do a high percentage throw. Do something that Blake Bortles is comfortable with. Try to see if it works out, at least. Try to do something, not just two knees to end the half, and then go to the half with the Patriots having all the momentum.
Everything.
And it's just, you got to score so much to be able to beat the Patriots, really.
Yeah.
And I know that the Jaguars have a great defense and everything. Brady's beaten the best defenses in his career. He knows how to beat defenses, and when it comes down to it, offense is where you're going to beat Brady in the fourth quarter. You got to be aggressive. You have to be just as aggressive as the Patriots are to beat them. You have to play at their own game, and that's what people always say, but then when it comes down to it, you go back to the traditional route of, let me just run the ball, try to see if I can get a couple yards. And that's when the Patriots are best. They seem to just new life in the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
New life.
Yeah. And, you know, one last thing if we are moving on. Just I heard someone tell me the other day that the Jags just, you know, wasted their opportunity. If we have any Jags fans listening, I don't know how many of you there are, but you should feel amazing about your team. You guys have what I think, you know, should be in the top three voting for Coach of the Year. I loved what Doug Marrone did. This team was, I want to say, 3-13 last year, and you brought him to 10-6.
Yeah.
Great turnaround. You have a great coach who has a young roster with tons of talent on the defense that are all under contract. So Jags aren't going anywhere. If you can upgrade the quarterback, get like one more piece on the offensive line, and upgrade middle linebacker, you guys are going to be in AFC Championship games for years to come.
I have to 100% agree with that. A lot of good people in that office right now. I mean, it's just all around.
Yeah.
And just upgrade that quarterback position, and you'll go even further.
And in 1 year, they did that flip.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Tom Coughlin shows up. Doug Marrone shows up. New mentality. Leonard Fournette, fourth pick. Calais Campbell, Barry Church, you're set.
Well, the talent was there even before this, I think. The Jaguars were just disappointing because they had a lot of talent on that offense and everything. And they didn't even have Allen Robinson this year, who is their best receiver.
Exactly.
And he is a very good talent. And I think if he gets the right quarterback with him, I mean, watch this Jaguars team.
Even the young receivers. Yeah. The young receivers, D.D. Westbrook, Keenan Cole.
Yeah,
Keenan
Cole. D.D. Westbrook, Allen Hurns is still there. Marquise Lee
had a great season.
That's what I'm saying. Marquise Lee
can
still catch a ball.
A great year with a quarterback who can throw the ball, and I'd love to see him there. It'd be amazing.
Like we said, stacked free agency quarterback. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, Jaguars definitely have a bright future.
Mm-hmm.
So on to the next topic here. So, we talked a little bit about the Vikings game earlier when we were talking about Foles. So, are the Vikings going to be a top competitor next year, or was this their best shot at the Super Bowl? And are they following a similar path to the Cardinals a couple years ago?
I think it all comes down to what happens in free agency. There's a lot of big changes. The big drop-off with the Cardinals last season, and I understand, you know, mirroring that, they lost, you know, Calais Campbell, they lost Tony Jefferson in the secondary. They lost a lot of key pieces on that defense. The Vikings need to add depth on their defense if they want to maintain success. Their star players are star players, but they can't play over three quarters of the snaps. You know, you need a good rotation on the defense, and so if they add some depth, I think their defense will be even better next year. The only problem is you won't have a lot of cap money if you have to spend big money on a quarterback. And they got to face that situation. You got to figure out what you're doing at the quarterback. Personally, for me, I want to see, you know, you need to keep two of them, in my opinion. You need one of them that I think is going back for sure is Bridgewater. I think Teddy's there for sure.
You really
think he's the cheapest one. I think he's the most affordable one. He's young. I think the Vikings, you know, don't have to pay him much because you haven't seen much from him. I think they at least keep him as the quarterback two and then bring it in for a competition. Then it comes down to Keenum and Bradford. And of the two, I would be more worried that Keenum's play was inflated because of the offense he ran with Pat Shurmur. And that's going to be detrimental, not having him as the offensive coordinator next season. I think, you know, you saw everywhere Shurmur went that his quarterbacks had amazing seasons. He had amazing success. Colt McCoy's best season with Cleveland was with Pat Shurmur. He had a good rookie season with Pat Shurmur. You know, of course, you know, he's not doing anything now, but he really elevated his quarterback's success. You know, Donovan McNabb with the Eagles when he was the OC there. Pat Shurmur is the reason that Case Keenum, in my opinion, had such a great season. I think that there's a lot that Case Keenum has learned and can possibly retain for next season. But if I'm choosing, you know, I'd have to choose. You go get Case Keenum and bring back Teddy Bridgewater. Sam Bradford's injuries concern me. You just got to hope that Case Keenum learned enough with Pat Shurmur to be able to get the job done with a new offensive coordinator.
Mm. Well, I'm going to go back to the original thing. So the reason I brought up the Cardinals in the first place compared to the Vikings, I just see a lot of similarities. I mean, you look at the Bruce Arians era when he took over for the Cardinals. They seemed like they were just getting better and better every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they reached their peak. They got to the NFC Championship game, then got destroyed by the Carolina Panthers. Mm. And then it seemed like, I mean, like, they've been disappointing the past 2 years. Everybody just kind of assumed, hey, they're going to keep at that level. They may even get better because they retained a lot of the same players. They lost a couple players here and there, but it looked like they had the general staff, and they just had David Johnson, who looked like he was going to be a star and everything.
Star.
Yeah, he is still a star, but still, he didn't get to play this year. But then they just they kind of were a disappointment. And the thing I saw, both these teams were bailed off their defense, really. That was the big thing, and they had good offenses, but great defenses.
Yeah.
And both these teams, the Vikings defense isn't old,
no.
But there are older players on that team, and they're not like the Jaguars where they're so young and so talented.
Yeah.
They have players that are in their prime right now. So I feel like this was one of their best opportunities to get to the Super Bowl, and I can definitely see a hangover coming next year. Like you said, they played their players so much this year, And then they're losing Jerick McKinnon to free agency. I believe they will lose him because everything that he's talked, he does not want to be the third guy in this rotation. He doesn't want to be that change of pace back. He wants to have a bigger role. And from everything that he's played this year, I don't see why he can't. I see him going to another team. He's a little undersized for that, but there may be a team that's willing to take a shot on him or at least giving him a bigger role in the offense, because when Dalvin Cook comes back to the Vikings, he's going to get the share. He's a good player.
He's going to be the
starter.
In the
game. That's what I'm saying. I mean, David Johnson comparison, but whatever. So, I think the Vikings, they're going to have a bit of a hanger next year, and I don't... They're going to win games next year. They'll still be a competitive team, but it would not surprise me at all if they miss out on the playoffs next year.
Definitely. I completely agree with you. And the biggest part of that hangover, you mentioned the defense. You know, They're getting older. They're in their primes. They should have capitalized this season. I think that this was the closest they'll get to the Super Bowl. And it especially just keeps coming back to me about Pat Shurmur. You know, that's a great offensive mind, and that offense was clicking this year on all cylinders with, you know, they lost, you know, their starting running back. Their receivers, before they had really been grooving this year, I mean, Adam Thielen really came alive this year. Stephon Diggs had a resurgence here after, you know, I want to say maybe 2 years ago he wasn't amazing, but, you know, he's been pretty good.
I'm a little worried
about the regression on offense, losing him as a play caller. And when you look at the NFC North,
Rodgers is going to be back.
Rodgers is going to play a full season, hopefully. And, you know, usually when that happens, they're, you know, guaranteed a playoff spot. He made the playoffs every year until this year when he was the starter. I think the Bears are going to massively improve this season. If I had to pick two teams that weren't in the playoffs this year that could sneak up in a wild card, it'd be the 49ers and the Bears. The Bears have a solid defense. I think they have one great cornerback, Kyle Fuller. They need to get someone opposite side of him. But they have a great defensive line, good veterans at the linebacking positions. I think they desperately need a wide receiver, free agency. And there's a few free agency. Like, Allen Robinson's a free agent this year. You can go snag him. I think Trubisky. I don't know why I said that. I think Trubisky will have a much better season next year now that John Fox isn't running the ball 30 times a game. They have good running backs. The Matt Nagy offense, I think, will flow really well. He's bringing that offense from Kansas City. I think the Bears, you know, are going to improve. And then Detroit's always there with Matt Stafford. You can't count out the Lions, you know, snag a few wins, especially divisional games. And so would I be shocked if the Vikings go from first to worst in that division? No, I wouldn't.
Ooh, worst is I think that their floor is third. I think their floor is third.
Do you think that but this is me thinking that Chicago, you know, has a really good shot next year.
I mean, like, the way you put it, you know, you think about Chicago, I definitely see it. They have that potential. They have to get the receiver.
Oh, yeah.
You can't count on Kevin White anymore. I mean, like, best case scenario, they go out and get a receiver like Allen or Dez Bryant, who's another free agent receiver that's a pretty big name. I know that a lot of people have.
Free agent?
Yeah, Dez Bryant's free agent this year.
What?
Yeah. You know, yeah, that's what they've. There's been a lot of talk about it.
I saw a lot of talk. I didn't realize he was a free agent.
Yeah. So Dez Bryant, Allen Robinson, somebody like that, they get a big name receiver. Then you have Kevin White. Maybe he develops this year. I mean,
if he stays healthy.
When he stayed healthy, I mean, like, we just haven't seen a big enough sample size. He's had flashes, I'd say. I mean, he's made some in college. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was so talented in college. It's just he hasn't been able to stay on the field and everything. So I guess it's Chicago who can turn around, but I still see the Vikings. I don't see them. I think that when I say they fall apart pretty much, I see a 7-9 season.
Gotcha.
Coming up. That's what I'm seeing, just like the Cardinals, where they win enough games to the point where, like, guys, geez, if you could just get a few things together, you guys would be really good.
Be in the playoffs.
But, yeah, I mean, like, how long can Terrence Newman be playing on the Vikings, too? That's one of the defense. So Xavier Rhodes is still really good, but how old is he, too? I think he's still pretty young.
Who?
Xavier Rhodes,
he's pretty young.
I think he's very young. But that's what I'm saying. He's in his prime.
This was their best shot to win a Super Bowl.
All these players
and they missed out on it because of an epic collapse and the lack of depth. They're going to have to fix some things. They're going to have to fix their depth, hopefully bring in a smart offensive coordinator. The talent is still there where you can still, you know, make a good run at the playoffs, but I wouldn't be surprised, like you said, if they miss out next year.
Well, originally before I was going to say, too, I thought the Vikings wouldn't have Teddy Bridgewater next year, but the point you make too. I mean, like, the highest ceiling would probably be with Bridgewater right now. Out of all three of those quarterbacks, not saying the other two are untalented or anything, but the highest potential player is probably Teddy Bridgewater because there was so much hype about him before he had that massive knee injury and everything. Yeah. But from all the talks that I've heard from Bridgewater, he does not want to be a backup quarterback. He really does not want to be a backup. No quarterback wants to be a backup. But there's so much interest in Bridgewater, I think, league-wide, that he will get another start at a starting shot at some point. So if the Vikings really think that he's their guy, then go ahead and keep him next season. But I think Bradford would be the guy that I thought that they would keep the most.
Really?
As a backup, at least. Ooh. Or if they want to have a competition and everything with Bradford and Bridgewater, and they hope that Bridgewater, if they sincerely hope that Bridgewater is the future of their franchise, Keenum had a great year with them. He is going to be a starter next year at on some team. He will, I would say 90% sure he's going to be a starter at some team next year. And he'll probably be given a pretty good cushion because of the year he had the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Bradford is more of a guy that, if Bridgewater is who they really think, 3 games in the season, Bridgewater's ready, put him in. So
the only thing that concerns me about having Bridgewater and Bradford is Bridgewater's coming off this horrific
injury. Both injury prone.
You need a reliable backup and not someone that's going to go out and kill it every game. But, you know, you need someone who can stay healthy. And Bradford played one game. And it was like, oh, he's got something wrong with his leg, you know, we'll see, next week will be fine. But they just teased us. He wasn't coming back. He finally made it back by the end of the postseason. But, like, you know, his knees are shot. You know, I understand you can probably get Bradford for pretty cheap because of the injury history.
That's what I'm saying.
So if you want to save money, up your defense, and then just, you know, bring in Bradford and Bridgewater, I think those are the two cheapest options.
Well, if you think about it, Keenum is not, I think he's 29 years old. He has some years left from an NFL quarterback standpoint and everything.
Yeah.
He's going to be looking for the longest, best contract out there. That is what he's going to be looking for, and that's what worries me with the Vikings, because if they really want Keenum next year, but they still want Bridgewater to be that guy eventually, to sign him to a 5-year deal or something like that, I mean, I don't think Keenum's going to take anything less than at least a 3-year deal. So it's going to be hard to take both of those. Bradford, on the other hand, he's going to be pretty cheap, I think.
Yeah.
And if, once again, I'm not inside that organization. I don't know how they really feel about Bridgewater after that devastating injury. I know they think highly of him, and at least they did before. But if they really think that he's the future of the franchise, I think Bradford and Bridgewater is the way to go, because Keenum's just going to be too expensive.
Yeah, well, the only thing that I heard otherwise is that the Vikings might franchise tag him. Get him 1 year, because especially he's not at that Kirk Cousins where we franchise tag and it's $35 million. He's still around that $20 million franchise tag.
Yeah.
So they might do that for 1 year.
It makes sense.
And then ease Bridgewater if things don't go well in. Then you just, you know, say goodbye to Case next year if you feel confident in Bridgewater.
A franchise tag would definitely make sense too. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
No,
well.
Not at all. Especially since it's just 1 year.
Keenum might have a problem with that, I'll be honest. Because,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Keenum, I mean, like, this is... I hate to say it, this could be the best year of Keenum's career, and it most likely it is.
Unless he goes to New York.
Yeah.
If he said with Pat Shurmur, needs to ride Pat Shurmur's coattails.
Sorry, cough
a little. Yeah, no, I don't think that's the path they'll go, but I think, you know, if the Giants didn't select a quarterback at 2, and, you know, they want a second quarterback in there with Eli, maybe they try and bring him over. I think right now with Shurmur, he's going to try and make the best out of Eli for one more year, because he has done that. He's elevated old quarterbacks before. He's gotten the best out of quarterbacks. So I think the Giants' plan with Shurmur is to get the best out of Eli for maybe one more year, maybe draft someone, have him sit under. But if they don't draft someone, bring in Case Keenum once you're done with Eli.
That'd be perfect for him. You think about it, as good as Thielen, Diggs, and Rudolph are, you go over and get Odell, Sterling Shepard, and Evan Ingram.
Yeah. That's great.
That's
the line Odell isn't as good. The running back game isn't as good, but you've got better receivers.
It's hard to say that they're better receivers too. Odell is so good. That's what I'm saying. Odell is so good. He's clearly one of the best in the NFL and everything. Mm-hmm. Shepard is really good
bright
too.
Bright young
receivers.
Players.
That's what I'm saying, because I love Thielen and Stephon Diggs. They've been my favorite duo of the year. So I mean, like, Keenum couldn't ask for a better situation if he's going somewhere else besides the Vikings. So yeah, you're definitely right with that. But on to the next subject. So we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week, too. How do you feel about the skills competition and the Pro Bowl as a whole, Blake? And I know we actually disagree in this situation for once, so...
Yeah, I was gonna say at the intro that this is a full Pro Bowl podcast and see what you guys thought, but then I realized we were actually going to talk about the Pro Bowl. I hate the Pro Bowl. I think it's terrible. I hate everything about it. I hate, you know, even the skills challenges I'm not a fan of necessarily. I think that... I hate that, for starters, you know, you had some fun times with the Pro Bowl back in the day when people were actually, you know, taking it seriously, and, you know, they're hitting people. You were out in Hawaii. I mean, of course, you know, there's that horrific injury on this when you were doing those sand drills.
Yeah.
A while back, that guy tore apart his leg. But, you know, now it's in Orlando. Like, some teams play their entire careers in better places than Orlando. I don't really see the interest in going to Orlando for the Pro Bowl. Players don't want to play. It's two-hand touch. They're not taking it seriously. They're just doing it for, you know, a small paycheck. Nothing interests me about the Pro Bowl, but apparently something does for you.
Well, I'm going to say this right now. I love the skills competition. I really do. I think it's revived. I hate the actual game. I think most NFL fans would agree that the actual game of the Pro Bowl is basically pointless, and there's no point to it and everything. The skills competition was awesome for me last year. I loved watching it as a fan. I mean, let's just look at some of the competitions this year they have. And they added this one. This is the first one I'm going to talk about. Kick-tack-toe. It is an actual kicking competition. I want to see this one. I know some people out there that hate kickers and everything won't like it, and your face right now is making me think you won't like it. I'm actually interested out there, because they're literally going to play tic-tac-toe with kickers from, like, a distance and everything, so they got to kick it in the direct slots. That's pretty cool. I want to see Justin Tucker out there hitting tic-tac-toe. Whatever. I don't need to see your negativity in all this. A gridiron gauntlet's pretty cool. The best hands competition. Precision passing was pretty awesome last year to me. You can see some of the quarterbacks out there hitting targets. I think that's a pretty cool one. The drone drop was pretty cool, with Odell catching those amazing balls from, like, so far up. Jarvis Landry going back and forth. That one was pretty cool. And the epic Pro Bowl dodgeball, I thought was going to be dumb at first, but that was pretty cool to see T.Y. Hilton out there catching, like, five balls in a row and everything when he's the only one.
You got me with T.Y.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying with T.Y. T.Y. was going off. I think it's just a fun thing to do, and I think it's so much better than the actual game itself. I think they should get rid of the game altogether and just do the skills competition. I mean, the game itself is really meaningless.
The only thing that, like, is annoying about this year's Pro Bowl specifically is that you had so many fun players that wouldn't be in the Super Bowl this year, but they're all hurt.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not seeing Aaron Rodgers in the Pro Bowl. You're not seeing Deshaun Watson. You're not seeing David Johnson. You're not seeing Odell Beckham Jr. Is Antonio Brown going to participate? I know he was a little banged, so he might not be.
He might not.
There's just not all those interesting faces of the organization playing. I mean, I'm just not excited to see the players there. I mean, it's cool. Like, I think the Colts, you know, they got T.Y. in, tight end Jack Doyle just got in.
Jack Doyle got in?
Yeah, I saw that he got in today or yesterday. But
yeah, sometimes they take some names out there and you gotta wonder.
You know, I love seeing my Colts in the
third worst record.
My God, we had such a bad season. But, like, I just have no interest in watching it.
Well,
not at all.
And I gotta remember sometimes, you're right, there's a lot of stars that aren't going to be in the Pro Bowl, and that's one of the biggest appeals, seeing the best players out there and everything. And I gotta remember that not everybody gets as excited seeing some of the lesser-known names out there as I do. I like seeing Delanie Walker out there and everything. I mean, like, players that, like, aren't as big as superstars. I get geeked out every time I see, like, any player that I had in fantasy out there. It makes me excited. So, I mean, I think the skills competition, it just adds so much more interest to the Pro Bowl in the first place. If it was, like, 3 years or 2 years ago when the skills competition wasn't, I'd be right there with you. Yeah. Pro Bowl needs
that game 2 years ago, I had written myself off from the Pro Bowl forever.
Which one? Are you talking about
Years ago, the one before the skills competition. Yeah. I watched that game, and I told myself I wouldn't watch the Pro Bowl
I haven't watched the Pro Bowl actual game in years. I haven't watched that one in years, because I'll watch a couple highlights, see Wes Walker in the back of the day kicking a field goal or something. That was pretty cool.
I'll go in and watch, you know, it was the one thing that I watched was Jeff Saturday, Peyton Manning take a hike from Jeff Saturday on their last play ever together. That was cool to see, you know. There's cool moments in there. I guess I'll watch the highlights, but you will not catch me watching anything for the Pro Bowl this week, even the skills competitions. If there's a little highlight on Twitter, I might pop and open it up, but I have no interest.
Best Pro Bowl memory, though, like, of a player actually doing something was Larry Fitzgerald. I think it was years ago, but, like, the announcers were in the booth talking about how nobody really pays attention to the Pro Bowl anymore because the players don't seem to be trying as much. And then Larry Fitzgerald catches a screen pass and just absolutely destroys a cornerback and runs over him and gets to the end zone. Yeah. Like, well, except for Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald still wants to win.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I love Larry Fitzgerald.
See, that's the thing. So, it's like, if you have a bunch of athletes out there that are like, oh, I'm playing football in front of people, I want to win.
Yeah.
But I think it's gotten too much to the point where it's like, oh, well, I'm already getting paid. I played a full season. I don't want to get hurt.
I can't even blame him.
No, I can't either.
Blame him. There's so many injuries. And
why would you risk your
career on something like that?
Patriots, I want to say it was a Patriots player. It was They were doing a sand agility challenge. Like, it was like a sprint in sand or, like, sidestepping in sand. He tore apart his entire leg and never played football again because of one cut in the sand. Like, why would you risk your career for something like that?
Well, all right, that's why, all right, the contact part of it just takes too much. I think that's what I'm saying, like, when they tackle and everything. And in all honesty, players can get knee injuries and things like that. Non-contact injuries can happen at any point. You put yourself at more of a risk when you're doing stuff. But I think the skills competition, most of those, I mean, it's no more injury risk than what they're doing in practice, I think. So I'm cool with the skills competition. I really am. And I think that's the future of the Pro Bowl. And if it's going to exist, it's going to exist through that in the future.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Okay. So I guess we'll go on to our final subject of the week, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl a little bit. We're going to have a big Super Bowl episode next week, but we'll give you a little taste right now. Eagles, obviously, the underdog in this one. How can the Eagles beat the Patriots?
You know, it's tough because I learned a lot from the Patriots watching them against Jacksonville, and, you know, I think the Patriots learned a lot, too. You saw Bill Belichick hug Matt Patricia?
Yeah.
That's the most excited I've seen him after a playoff game ever. He knew that they shouldn't have won that game. I think he knew deep down that, like, wow, these guys are so much faster, stronger, more athletic than us that we shouldn't have won.
Or it's not, yeah, he knows they were so much more talented, and he just thought to himself, we game-planned the crap out of this game, and we beat them.
I really don't think he expected maybe to win that, because especially when you're in the fourth quarter. You saw how he celebrated with Matt Patricia. You never see that. You never see that out of Bill. So, you know, I learned a lot from that. Is, you know, it's great teams like that, great athletic teams on all, like, different cylinders, you know, the defense, offense, that it takes to even get close to being the Patriots. And fortunately, the Eagles don't have that at all levels. You know, they're banged up. You're missing your left tackle. You're missing your MVP quarterback. You're missing a linebacker. If the Eagles want to beat the Patriots, you're going to have to get a lot from their defensive line. It's really going to come down to their defensive line. Fletcher Cox has been amazing this entire season, and specifically the postseason. He's been on fire, one of the best D-tackles in football. He's going to have to own that Patriots line. And like I said, you know, the way to beat the Pats is you put pressure on Tom Brady through the entire game. Fletcher Cox can do that amazing. If, you know, if Derek Barnett, rookie, can come in and get, you know, his one great spin move and get a hit on Brady, that's great. They have talent in the front seven to put pressure. And the secondary's been getting a little better, too. You know, I'm not going to say that it's a 100% chance that the Patriots win. I think there are things that the Eagles can do. I think Peterson is a great play caller. He adjusted games well. He has great halftime adjustments. And then the other thing I guess I would say is the power run game really needs to be present.
And they have good running backs.
They have very good running backs. Jay Ajayi and Blunt look great, I think. And they have a massive offensive line. I was reading this off the other day. They, you know, their entire right side was over 300 pounds each, and you got one guy 335. They have a mammoth offensive line. And, you know, I guess I'm not too impressed with the Pats' front seven. I think, you know, that their secondary is great. But, you know, the Patriots' front seven, if you just want to run the ball on them and just put pressure on them the entire game, kind of like what the Jags did in the first half. It was a lot of power running, and then Blake Bortles, you know, with some play action, rollout, stuff like that. You know, I think you can get, you know, up early like Jaguars did. But, you know, it's going to be tough for the Eagles to do that.
It's funny that you mentioned that. Well, like what you said earlier about the Patriots talent-wise, the Eagles have more talent all around. They do. I think they have more talent all around. I'm talking about all around, minus Brady, how much above he is, and everything like that. I mean, it's funny, and the Patriots don't spend much on defense. They don't spend much money on anybody, really. But the one player they did spend money on in the free agency was Stephon Gilmore this past year. And Stephon Gilmore made that amazing play against Blake Bortles his last game. I mean, that was a great play. Amazing. He jumped over the guy. But I'll get back to what I was saying. I have three keys for how the Eagles can beat the Patriots. I think Nick Foles has to play the level he did last week. I think that they have to get pressure on Brady. Like I said, the front seven is huge. It's an absolutely huge part of this game. They have to be able to milk the clock when it matters. And that's the key that I never see against the Patriots. When it matters the most, the offense, they always seem to shut down. When the Patriots need to stop, they get a stop, like, every time. And the Patriots, it's just something that they do. It's just something that they just have gotten accustomed to. If Brady has the ball if it's a one-possession game at one point in the game, you can almost guarantee he is going to score.
Yeah.
You're going to get behind. Mm-hmm. So you got to be able to – you got to think when you have that one-possession lead, you have a four-point lead, maybe a three-point lead, two-point lead, whatever it is, I got to score a touchdown right here. That has got to be your mindset. It can't be, I've got to keep the ball as long as possible and run a couple times and trust my defense to win. Because it doesn't matter the level of defense.
No.
As good as the Eagles' defense is, the Jaguars' defense is better.
Yeah.
And you just saw what happened to them.
Exactly.
Danny Amendola scored 2 touchdowns in them in the final quarter. Sorry, your offense didn't do anything. You lost.
Yeah.
You cannot rely on the defense when at the end of the game. You have to be able to put up some points. So.
Yeah, and that's one big difference between what I think Doug Marrone and Doug Peterson will do. Doug Marrone got way too lazy in the second half and was just trying to milk the clock with a lot of run plays. And Doug Peterson doesn't run his offense like that. He's a very aggressive. He always wants to put points on the board, and that's the way to beat the Patriots. You need to put points up on the board if you want to, you know, your defense, as good as it can be, we learned last week, you know, it's never good enough if your offense can't put up points throughout the game.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's all about that.
You can put up 28 points in the Super Bowl, be up 28-3, but if you don't get to 35, then, you know, the Patriots have a way of coming back.
Where'd you get that analogy?
Oh, yeah. Good Super Bowl last year. Oh, my God, that was amazing. But, but yeah, I completely agree. The front seven needs to control. What is a weak Patriots offensive line, especially the right side of the offensive line? They got to really put pressure on that. Thuney, I know I mentioned him last week, guard. You know, the Eagles got to put pressure on him because he still didn't look great against Jacksonville. You got to get to him quick because if Brady has time in the pocket, he can, you know, those receivers will get open against the secondary. And especially, you know, if Gronk's healthy, I think, you know, Gronk has an amazing game. I don't know who in Philadelphia is going to cover Gronk one-on-one in man-to-man, but whoever it is, I think, you know, Gronk will have a much better advantage than he did against Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. The Eagles, all season long, I feel like have had the mantra of people who have been like, they're overrated, pretty much. I think all season long, a lot of people, and even though they got so high up so quickly, because, and then people were like, their schedule, things such as that, and then Winston down, everybody's like, written him off, and I'm not going to lie, I wrote him off from the Super Bowl once Winston down. I thought he was the main key and everything. They've been the underdog in both games, their playoff games. And they've been pretty dominant. They've shown what's gotten there. They've shown that they're a good all-around team. I still think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I will say that. But I can't count the Eagles out. I can't.
No.
A lot of people are saying this is going to be a horrible Super Bowl. The Patriots just go in there and absolutely dominate them. But from what we've seen, I mean, it's going to be interesting because the Eagles have really thrived off this underdog mantra and everything.
Yeah.
So I feel like they could come in there and get an early lead. Like a lot of teams have gotten against the Patriots. It's just, are they going to be able to maintain it?
Can they put up points in the second half?
And then keep it going.
Yeah.
Keep it going. It's all about keeping it going against the Patriots. You got to
always
keep
put on the gas pedal.
Mindset the entire way through. It's got to be that entire, until the clock is set at zero, you have to keep going.
Exactly.
You have to keep that same exact aggressive mindset.
It's never too late for the Pats to come back.
It never is. It almost never is. As long as statistically possible, if the Pats come out, do not count them out.
Yeah.
Yep. So, unless it's going down to onside kicks, and then I'll take the Eagles in that situation.
Yeah, right. Oh
yeah,
God,
that's the only
that
time.
Was
and then, you never know. Gostkowski, when was the last time he had to do an onside kick? He might have something super nasty up his sleeve that he's been working on for years that nobody's ever seen. I don't know. I'm getting into
like
too much speculation.
Would have that game.
They would have. Something's up with
they
that. They
have something there.
They have to have the nastiest onside kick game in the business because we haven't seen it yet.
Exactly.
So, well, yeah, I'm excited to talk about it next week even more. We'll probably have a special guest or maybe two next week. So be sure to check that out next week, and be sure to check out me and Blake's and all the writers at Pure Sports Network's articles for the next couple of weeks because, guys, it's going to be an exciting one.
Yeah, and make sure to follow us. Follow the Pure Sports account on Twitter at Pure Sports Network. Pure Sports NFL for our own NFL page, and the at Goldigo Podcast Twitter. Make sure, you know, you'll get a lot of updates on our articles, our stuff when it comes out. And, yeah, I'm excited for next week. It's going to be a good one.
Yes, sir. We'll see you all guys next week.
Take care.